Someone told you knee pain is just getting older? They were wrong. The Joint Relief Institute offers fast joint pain relief covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Thank you, Bob. Telling my producer, Griffin, what a talented person you are musically, Bob Kessler. I know you play the harmonica. We talked about that last week.
Yes, I do.
You play the guitar or keyboard, too?
I mess around on guitar, but I just know, like, the cowboy chords.
I'm breaking with a little Taylor Swift music for reasons we'll get to here in just a moment. So, what is guitar? What are cowboy chords on?
You know, just
guitar?
Like the ones that you can do at the far end of the neck, like A and D and G and C, and just like
the beginner stuff.
Yeah.
Well, that's good to hear you on the radio today, friend.
Too.
So, in this first half hour, we'll start with the Kanye West story because we're not doing them in order of importance. Then I'll go to the topic of should we forgive student loan debt or at least lower the interest rates, and let's all vote for the candidate who gives us the most free college, and then our mincing rascals in the next half hour. We'll talk a little politics. Let me just read from my newspaper. Here's the source it says is News Services, so maybe AP and others, but here's the essence of the Kanye West story today. Kanye West's new album, The Life of Pablo, has ignited a new controversy between the rapper and pop superstar Taylor Swift. Late Thursday afternoon at Madison Square Garden, after weeks of intrigue, changed plans, adjusted track lists, and scrapped album titles, the rapper-slash-designer debuted his third Yeezy collection for Adidas and his Defiant seventh solo album simultaneously on the city's biggest stage. The album included a song called Famous, in which he called the bad blood singer Taylor Swift a B-I-T-C-H, and said he made her famous. On his Twitter account, he said the lyric was not an insult. I don't know why she would think that was. I did not diss Taylor Swift, and I've never dissed her, he wrote. I called Taylor and had an hour-long combo with her about the line, and she thought it was funny and gave her blessings. Tree Payne, Swift's publicist, said in a statement that West did not ask Swift for approval. Quote, Kanye did not call for approval, but to ask Taylor to release his single, Famous, on her Twitter account, the statement said. She declined and cautioned him about releasing a song with such a strong misogynistic message. The show began, this is the fashion one, the big do out there in New York. The show began with a procession in the stands by the extended Kardashian West family, Kim, Chris, Kendall, North, Caitlyn Jenner, and so on, that was broadcast on the arena video screen. West himself escorted Lamar Odom, the former NBA player and husband of Khloe Kardashian, to his seat. It was Odom's first public appearance since he was found unconscious last year at a Nevada brothel. Meanwhile, Martin Scully, this story just keeps giving, doesn't it? Martin Scully, the former Turing Pharmaceuticals chief executive, whose AIDS drug price hike earned him notoriety and widespread scorn, is offering $10 million to become the sole owner of West's new album. Quote, I've been a tremendous fan of your music for many years, Scully wrote in a letter to West. Specifically, the album College Dropout inspired me to succeed at a young age. He asked West to, quote, sell this recording solely to me for the price of, dun-dun-dun, $10 million. Close quotes.
Is that a CD or an LP? Or an 8-track or something?
Yeah, I think it would be the exclusive rights to it. But two things strike me about this story. Number one, Taylor Swift's publicist is named Tree Payne. And number two, this doesn't even mention the Bill Cosby controversy this past week. Kanye cannot get out of his way, or he loves every bit of this, and he somehow thinks this is good for his brand. He didn't have anything to do, I guess, with the Martin Scully thing. Scully reached out to him, but isn't that perfect? And I would imagine if Scully got exclusive rights for Kanye West's album for $10 million, he would probably do to that what he did to AIDS drugs. He would then jack up the price. If you want to get it, he'd find a way to make more money for himself. But an album would now cost $75 or something like that. None of it makes sense, right? But Griff, I know you're a big Kanye West fan. You can chime in here if you like. I don't even know what to say about all of this.
Well, throw out all the Martin Shkreli stuff. It's just further complicating an already insane situation.
Yeah, I know.
But it is amazing. Yeah, he just finds a way in. I don't know what to think of that guy. It's been a very hard week to be a Kanye West fan. And
yeah,
there have been hard weeks in the past. I've been a fan since his first album. It hit me in, you know, late grade school. It was a very impressionable time. And I've been, you know, one of the biggest Kanye West fans since.
Slash defenders. Because when you're a Kanye West fan, you have to defend Kanye West.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, the biggest, until now, the biggest time was also with Taylor Swift when he interrupted her on the award show stage, as we all know. And I was willing to go to bet for Kanye on that one. But that's about as hard as it's been in the past. And I'm very sad this week. I can't stand by him with hardly any of this. It's very upsetting.
Because he tweeted Cosby is innocent with a bunch of exclamation points, capital letters, because Cosby is innocent isn't emphatic enough. And then he went away. He hasn't commented further on that, to my knowledge.
No,
so he just sort of lobbed that out there.
And he hasn't deleted it either.
Really? Well, I guess why not? If you're going to say that, you're going to own that. I mean, you don't accidentally.
It wouldn't make a difference,
there.
But that's what people usually do when they make a mistake like that. They will delete it, even though it doesn't matter. By then, the damage is done. But it just shows you that he's somewhere else with all this. I don't know what to make of it.
I know.
That's what makes me sadder than the Taylor Swift stuff too. And that's bad in a different way. But the Bill Cosby thing was what really threw me and upset me.
Well, you know, there's 50 women who have charged Cosby with sexual assault, but there's one for whom there is a trial, or, you know, there's a legal proceeding about one of them. So he was vague about all of that. Does he mean in this one instance that woman doesn't have evidence to win a conviction? I mean, you could have that conversation, but I'm not getting that from this.
You're not getting... No, I don't...
I'm working it here.
I really appreciate, the seriousness with which you are willing to...
Well, why else do you say that? What is his point? I called a rock critic I know, a friend of mine, and I said, what's Kanye doing this week? And he said, here's what he's doing. He has a new album coming out. The Grammys are coming out. Nobody's talking about him. It's all politics. It's all somebody else right now. And so he just found a way to insert himself into the conversation, and he doesn't care.
I don't think he's that calculating, and I'm not trying to defend him here, but I don't think that that's a thought process for him. And this is just me. I have followed him for a very long time. I'm not an expert. I haven't met him. But my sense is that maybe he internalized that feeling and felt like I need to get out there and really, but I don't think it was an actual thought process. Like, I need to promote my album, so I'll say some crazy stuff.
Right, and then
I usually mean this in the best way, and now I mean it in the worst way, but I think he's genuine in what he says.
Oh, yeah, I think he's an artist. I think he's tortured at times. I think it's self-inflicted, but I think that's part of the package. You love him and hate him, these brilliant people. And some people object to the notion that I'd call him that, but I think he's really talented. This doesn't make any sense, but maybe that's part of the talented genius package. But that he would say, okay, if even internally something in his head said, hey, we need to get some attention, nobody's talking or tweeting about us, I know, then why didn't he go to the moon landing was faked or something else, but Cosby is innocent. Wow. Okay, Kanye. Okay, let's do this. So I talked to Senator Amy Klobuchar this past week. She's a Minnesota Democrat. She believes that interest rates on college loans should be reduced. If you are paying on a college loan, are you paying 6, 7, 8% for that? She said it should be 3, 3.5%. I don't have a problem with that. But when I talked to her about the other presidential candidates, and she's endorsing Hillary Clinton, I said, well, what about the idea that going forward, we would make 4 years of state school free for everybody, or maybe the Bernie Sanders version, which is 2 years of state school would be free, the junior college education. Some people have gone so far as to say that if you pay on your student loan for 10 years straight without missing a payment, that the loan thereafter will be forgiven. I wonder what your reaction is to any of these proposals. In brief, I sure don't see any harm in lowering the interest rate. Although when you do that, that means somebody else doesn't get paid. and I don't like changing the rules because somebody else is expecting something that they don't get and it's no fault of theirs. And that's the problem with student loan forgiveness. Even if you go 10, if you go 100 years and keep paying regularly and you still have a balance, you still owe that money. You can't take money away from somebody and not expect to pay it back. And loan forgiveness, which sounds so sweet, who wouldn't be for forgiveness, is actually robbing somebody else of money they're due. So I know we have over $1 trillion in student loan debt out there, and it breaks my heart to hear the stories, but I don't know how you ever imagine that. And then finally, on the colleges, I've always been saying that we ought to find a way to make college free for everybody. Your turn now, 312-981-7200. Let's jump in with some quick calls on WGN.
Some enchanted evening.
I love this song, and I'm in a romantic mood, so...
You may see a stranger.
Trust you'll forgive me for this if you don't like the sound of it.
You may see a stranger.
Little Bob Dylan.
Across a crowded room. And somehow you know.
Happy Valentine's Day weekend to you.
You know you.
87 guys just went, wait, Valentine's Day is coming up when? Why didn't I do
that? Somehow you'll see her again.
It's 1:24. All right, let's pick up a couple of phone lines. You can get in on the phone. I'd like to hear from you. 312-981-7200. Student loans, what is yours and what do you make of loan forgiveness or at least reducing the interest rates? Let's start with John. Go ahead, John. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, John. Speaking as a father who has four children, three in college and one about to go into college, I honestly believe that the student loan crisis is at the precipice of where the housing market was in 2008.
I think you're right.
And the only challenge relative to that is that most of these loans, most of this $1 trillion in loans is backed by the U.S. government. So the thought process is, and why it's such a hot topic from a candidate perspective, is that it's the government. They don't pay their bills anyway. Why should we pay our bills? And if they're offering to absorb that debt, absorb it. And I'm speaking of, you know, my daughter graduated from college 2 years ago. She's a teacher, doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of money, and her student loan bill was $438 a month when she graduated, 6 months after she graduated. So I know I have another son at DePaul, another son at Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh, and they're going to graduate with $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 in loans, and it is what it is. And I just think that ultimately it's going to bite us in the butt, just like the housing market did.
You'd be okay, though, if at least if the rates were reduced or if there was some sort of debt forgiveness, you'd be cool with that. But you also know that I'd be paying part of your son's tuition then if that happened, right?
I'm not necessarily for forgiveness. What I'm for is a more reasonable rate of interest. So, I mean, if you're borrowing $50,000, and it's for your college, or it's for you to go to university to become a productive citizen in the world. The fact of the matter is you graduate, you have to move home with mom and dad because you can't afford to do anything otherwise. You can't buy a new car. Yeah. You'll never be able to get a house. So the domino effect of this student loan crisis is daunting.
Well, you know, and the first domino, if I may, John, I think the first domino is the price of college. It's too expensive. It's outpaced inflation. It's outpaced everything. College education's too expensive. State universities, private universities. And I don't know when I get to be king, and we still got to get through the paperwork on this one, but when I get to be king, it won't be as expensive as it is now. John, thanks for the call.
Thanks, John. Bye-bye.
You betcha. My best to your family. Okay. Hey, Benji, help me with the phones there. Attaboy. Let's go to Carol's next on line two. Carol, you're on WGN. Go ahead, Carol. You're on the air.
Hi there. I borrowed $10,000 when I was 41 to go back to graduate school at 8%. But then when the loan came due, it was nearly $15,000 because of compounding interest. So my recommendation is definitely not forgiveness. If you're going to borrow it, you have to pay it back. But maybe find some way not to make it non-compounding.
Great call. Thanks for calling in, Beth, or Carol. Thanks for joining us. And Ben, pop her out, attaboy, and let's go to line three then, and that's Beth. You're on WGN. Go ahead, Beth.
Hi. I have a similar comment. We helped our kids. We have four children, and we struggled to help them all get through college. I mean, it was giving up a lot of stuff. And now if they forgive the loans that were given, how do my kids get paid back for what they're going to owe us? They owe us some of the money that we lent them. And how does that balance out? I mean,
well, if you want it to be fair, it won't be.
Yeah.
I mean, it won't be. I mean, somebody is going to get screwed, and it'll be the people like you who, you know, co-signed a loan and then paid it off. And then here comes the next generation. They go, well, it's too high. I owe too much money. And you say, well, I don't know how to fix that, but you shouldn't have gotten into that pickle to begin with. Lower interest rates are okay, but I don't think you can start writing stuff like this off.
It's true, because when we took a loan out to help our kids, we did it because we knew we would pay less interest, and we would also be able to write off part of the interest.
Oh,
because
interesting.
It was a home equity type loan. So yeah. It's kind of like you get screwed in the end for trying to be more financially responsible in the beginning. I don't know.
Beth, thanks for the phone call.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Glad you joined us. You betcha. We'll pause here. We'll update you on the news. Our Mincing Rascals have a few things to say about the presidential campaign. That's coming up on WGN. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Mincing Rascals. I'm John Williams from WGN Radio, and on Facebook, I'm King John. Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune, a columnist there. Hi, Eric Zorn.
Hi, John. What's this Valentine's Day event you're speaking of? If you clarify that for me later,
clearly
please.
Clearly, you're a romantic
man.
Wonderful husband.
Kristen McQuarrie is here, too. She's an editorial writer and columnist for the Chicago Tribune. Are you a romantic, Kristen?
No, actually, we'll get to
pragmatist.
That.
And Steve Bertrand, who's the most feminine of the four of us, is also here from WGN Radio.
I'd take offense if it weren't so true.
I know. I meant it as a compliment, Steve.
And I took it that way.
I can't wait to hear what your Valentine's Day plans are.
So let's get rolling and talk a little bit about what's happened this past week on the presidential trail. We always talk about that. Steve Bertrand, what was the headline for you this week on the presidential front?
Well, I think what happened to Marco Rubio after doing well enough in Iowa, you know, and they made the mistake of leaking out their 3-2-1 strategy, number three in Iowa, two in New Hampshire, and then one in South Carolina. And then all of a sudden he had to live up to it. And when he didn't in New Hampshire, you know, he's failing now and he's behind the eight ball. I mean, it's just delightful the way Chris Christie took him out, A, but then B, the fact that Christie didn't benefit from it. And instead it was this guy, John Kasich, who did so well.
A high percentage of the people who voted in New Hampshire made their decision within the 3 days beforehand, meaning they had the benefit of watching Christie, you know, sort of paint Rubio into that corner. And you can imagine some of those people going, the hell with it. I'm going to go with the happy warrior. And Kasich, out of the blue, not entirely out of the blue.
No, he spent a lot of time there.
106 town meetings. He rather ran for governor there. But lo and behold, there's John Kasich in the number two spot.
With his Mr. Rogers act, with his acceptance or his victory speech or whatever you call it.
I thought it was a great speech.
It was very touching. It seemed like from a different race and a different time almost, didn't it?
Well, then maybe that's why he got those votes.
Maybe.
Because all the other ones, everyone else is running the other race.
You just got to look at your neighbor and give him a hug if he's not doing well.
Spend a little time, Eric. Spend a little time.
Yeah, but I mean, the reason I liked Rubio out of the gate was because the first thing we saw was the hostility in Trump and the cynicism in Huckabee and Cruz, and there was fresh-faced, cherry-cheeked Rubio with his soaring Obama-esque rhetoric. And then that kind of went away, and we all sort of reconciled ourselves to the fact that this is going to be a hard-fought slugfest. But then there's this frumpled guy in a brown suit down on the end, and I want to believe that people are starting to gravitate to that on its own merit, just like that.
He's been called the Democrats.
Right. Sorry, John.
He's been called the Democrats' favorite Republican.
Right. I mean, he actually is not that moderate. moderate. He's just moderate compared to this field. Right. He could be a great nominee, but in this race at this time, he's just that was his shining moment. It's done. It's gone.
What happens to the Republican establishment now? I mean, it just seems like the conventional wisdom here is that this race, this result, has blown up the strategy in the Republican establishment of finding a plausible contender to go up against Cruz and Trump and knock those guys out, because I don't think the Republican Party itself wants either of those two men at the top of their ticket.
Remember when you were a kid, you'd go to outside the Hornsby store, they'd have that little rocking horse you'd put a quarter on and you'd ride it? Does that sound familiar?
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
All right, so Marco Rubio got to ride the horse in Iowa. John Kasich did in New Hampshire. Maybe it will be Jeb Bush in South Carolina, but they just keep changing riders.
I think Trump is, I mean, the fact that he won New Hampshire, that's where I thought maybe he was going to stumble. And he won by so much. I mean, we're talking about John Kasich coming in second, but he was still, what, 10 points behind Trump?
Oh, no, doubled it. No.
Double?
20, wasn't 20. It? About close yeah. to 20 somewhere?
So, you know, let's not get so excited about the second place finish.
How many of you saw the debate on Saturday night or watched the highlights anyway?
Yeah, sure.
Well, I thought the most interesting thing about that debate was how gloves off the other candidates were about Trump. And I'm hearing on the ground right now in South Carolina that is really starting to change, that they are going after Trump now really hard, that they thought that the strategy of kind of leaving him alone and picking on each other and going for second place was the way to go. That didn't turn out to be all that smart. And so now they've got to coalesce around beating Trump, because I mean, Trump has been a great sideshow. He's been endlessly entertaining for us on this podcast. But the Trump story is getting serious now. I mean, this guy
it's
looks...
It's been serious.
No, I mean, Kasich has it has not been, and it's not.
Oh, Kasich has a PAC that started raising money to try to take down Trump months ago. And they have to be careful, because if he becomes the nominee and they have so severely damaged him in the primary, then he has no chance against the Democrats.
John is still a denier.
I'm absolutely a denier. Why wouldn't I be? I live in America. I have faith in Americans. Jeb Bush is this week starting to run as the mainstream Republican. He's decided to embrace convention because he knows that at the end of the day, people aren't going to throw in with something as cuckoo bananas as Donald Trump.
Donald Trump stood on the stage this week and called another candidate, a major candidate, I'm not going to say it, but refer to the female anatomy.
It rhymes with wussy.
Right, whatever, okay? And he said it on the stage and then said, well, she asked me to repeat it.
A woman said it.
But the point is, the guy who wants to be our president stood on a stage, used that term to describe any other person.
What's your point, though, Steve?
It helped him.
No, it
That's
did
my
not.
Point.
Nothing has hurt him.
And he's going to roll in South Carolina, John.
Nothing has hurt him.
He's going to roll in South Carolina. First of all, Iowa and New Hampshire don't determine the presidency or even the candidacy for the presidency of the United States.
Okay.
Really, I'm not so interested in your guys' affection for your love of Donald Trump, because you're all big Trump lovers.
Oh, no.
I think we are all on record as being anti-Trump.
I'm terrified. I'm getting scared of Trump, because if he can confound our expectations in these primaries. I mean, when he got into the race, remember he came down the escalator and he gave a speech in front of a bunch of hired
that was ridiculous.
People in the audience.
John, I'm sorry.
We all just thought, this is just a joke and this is going to last a couple of months and then he'll go away and we'll start talking, being serious. And then he would say these crazy things and it would just help him. And suddenly it looks like he's got a strong core of support.
The National Review, one of the most conservative online publications, the day after his announcement, Trump's announcement, the headline was, witless ape rides escalator.
A couple of weeks ago, Neville Chamberlain character was on Downton Abbey, and I think, you know, you're the Neville Chamberlain of the Mincing Rascals.
I mean, I didn't even finish my thought, but what disappoints me more is that you don't have more faith in American citizens. The people don't want Trump. They're smarter than that. They see this show, and they're still going, yeah, I'll vote for it. They're not even saying I'll vote for it, but whatever those poll numbers are, remember, he's not over 50%. I still don't believe that you guys don't have more faith in the American people on this.
2 weeks ago, I would have considered your scolding to be plausible.
The numbers speak for themselves, John. This is not emotional. This is not anecdotal anymore. There is data. There are results. People are voting for him. I mean,
he won't be the nominee.
So what you're saying? But wait, because I said so.
We need to verify our bet on this.
If we remember, the record will show that John has been touting the candidacy of Marco Rubio.
So, all right, Eric, do you really think, I know we did this last week, but let's just segue out of this segment with you guys all putting your mark down.
I'm just going to go with Trump.
I'm still thinking that Trump looks right. Although I'm still thinking that the way things are going.
I thought you were a brokered convention.
Well, I was first a brokered convention guy, and then I've been going to Trump and back to brokered convention. But it's either going to be Trump or a brokered convention. That's
in a nod to you, Pollyanna. I'm going to say Jeb Bush.
Well, now you're crazier than me, Steve Bertrand.
Well, who else is it going to be?
We'll pause here, come back, and when we do, we'll ask the gang what their recommendations are. I have a Valentine's-themed one. Steve, I'll be very disappointed if you don't have something Valentine-centric for us.
I don't know where this is coming from.
And we'll get to our recommendations after this. You're listening to our Mincing Rascals segment. We do it Saturdays at this time between 1:30 and 2 o'clock, and we always close on the Mincing Rascals with recommendations. We start with Eric Zorn.
I'm really psyched about this new TV show hosted by Samantha Bee. It's called Full Frontal. It's on the TBS network Mondays at 9:30. It's the newest entry into the late-night comedy, political commentary thing. And it is the show that I've been looking for since Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert went off the air. Yeah, Samantha Bee was a former cast member from Jon Stewart's show. She's brilliant, and she's the first woman in a long time to have a late-night show. And the first episode was just terrifically funny, and I just felt like hallelujah, we've got the Daily Show ethos back, because the new guy on the Daily Show is not getting it done. So
that's what I hear. Yeah. What about you, Kristen McQuarrie? What's your recommendation this week?
So I just finished a book called Euphoria by Lily King. If you like historical fiction, I would recommend it. It's kind of based loosely on the life of Margaret Mead, who was an anthropologist, and there's kind of a love triangle involved. So it's just a good read if you're looking for something a little more brain candy.
And, John, if you're not sure, you can Google her, Lily King and Steve Bertrand on books, and hear a very nice interview about that book.
Oh, did you interview her?
I did. It's great. Loved her.
All right.
Was she delightful?
Delightful. And it's a great book. I agree. Really love that book. My wife got me a subscription to the magazine called Lucky Peach. Have you heard of that?
Mm-mm.
It's
no.
A food magazine.
Sounds dirty.
It's like it's food.
It is. It totally is. Whatever he's about to say, discount.
It's food and travel and sort of smart writing and everything. And I really like it. And I just found the website. And so they have an article on sausages for Valentine's Day.
See what I mean?
And so they've got different sausages they list, you know, and how they would recommend. Like early lovers would be Italian sausage because there's a little sweet, little spicy, but not too much. There's the breakfast sausage for the one-night stand, hoping that a generous morning gesture might turn a fling into something more.
Lucky so the name peach. Of that magazine is what again?
The Lucky Peach.
Lucky Peach.
You are the worst.
Thank you.
My recommendation is I was looking this week for Valentine's Day songs, you know, My Funny Valentine. And so I've actually Googled that one and went to it on YouTube. And one of the first searches that came up was for Britain's Got Talent 2013, a young woman who comes out nervous in blue jeans and sneakers, and she just stands there and she sings My Funny Valentine. I'm such a sucker for these Britain Got Talent things because they're so predictable and formulaic, but they work every time. Backstage, they tell the story about this person who doesn't have much confidence, cut to the jaded audience that are like, yeah, right, you're going to be able to bring it. Then the person starts, cut to Simon Cowell and the panelists who are like, what do we have here? Back to the artist on the stage. And then finally it starts to swell and you feel yourself getting caught up in the emotion of this thing, and she's singing the song and afterwards she's just crying because she's had this moment. And they do that every week.
I was going to say, it sounds like you never know what's coming next.
And I'm telling you, 2013, if you Google that, Britain's Got Talent, My Funny Valentine, that will be my Valentine's Day gift to you.
Is your mouth a little weak? When you open it to speak, are you smart? Oh, don't change your everything. Not if you care for me. Say,
Just love that, you know. And that's from Britain's Got Talent, 2013, Funny Valentine. If you just Google that, you'll find it. In fact, on my Facebook page, I put the whole video up. It runs about like 10 minutes long because they tell her story backstage a little bit. You see her fidgeting, that whole audience scene. And then afterwards, which you don't see, of course, on the radio, and I didn't play for you here, is how unglued she comes. Simon Cowell says to her, "I like the song, and I like you." And you get the feeling this girl needed a little redemption or validation or something, and so she's just unglued. And you can't watch it and not just weep happily for her that anybody would have that moment. It's so special. So that's on my Facebook page. I'm King John on Facebook. This is WGN. By the way, just a couple of other things on that Facebook page. So that's the close of our Mincing Rascals segment, and the full podcast of that runs a half an hour. I say that as though, oh man, what a slog. But we're only able to play an edited version of it for you here. But the gang talked more about Bernie and Hillary. We talked about the murder raid in Chicago and a couple of other topics as well. So it's not just the Republican show, although each week it's just so delicious we can't resist it. So we do that as well. Speaking of the political scene, so that's all on my Facebook page. While I'm on there mentally anyway, you can download that there. You can listen to it there. My weekly conversation with Thomas Jefferson is there. Jefferson last week talked about the Super Bowl party. I asked him again about did he host a Super Bowl party last week. Jefferson did, but it was dull. And then we talked about a number of current political issues as well as events from a couple of hundred years ago. And then finally on my Facebook page, the details of my next trip on the Danube. There's a few slots still available, and I want you to come along with us. I looked at the lineup for Sunday's TV shows. When you look at politics, you kind of get a sense of where everybody is by seeing who's guesting on the Sunday morning shows. Jeb Bush will appear on one of the Sunday shows tomorrow. John Kasich will appear on two, which would be two more than he normally is. Donald Trump will only appear on two. Bernie Sanders will appear on three. Marco Rubio will appear on five. Ted Cruz and Hillary Clinton are taking Sunday off. It's 1:57 on WGN. Okay, so in the next hour, our Vibe Score segment where we score the news. It's fun. It's funny. You score the news with Vibe Score. I'll tell you more about that a little later on. And also we'll talk to somebody from the Princeton Review about the universities and colleges that are worth your money, ones that pack a punch, dollar for dollar. And we'll talk about Chicago and Illinois schools. That's all coming up on WGN. Thank you, Bob. It's 2:08. This is John Williams on WGN. I'm here weekdays. Pardon me. I'm here Saturdays from 1 to 3. Saturdays from 1 to 3. So we've got a little while still to go. Our Vibe Score segment in the next half hour, we'll score the news, kind of do a fast review of everything from sports and pop culture to politics and hard news. We'll explain in the next half hour. In the past hour, we talked a little bit about Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders' plans for limiting exposure to students for their college education. I mean, to the degree that they would even make it free or reduce the interest rates on loans or loan forgiveness. And the calls that come in, some of them just break your heart. I mean, every time I do this on the radio, I hear from people who are $20,000, $30,000, $100,000 in student debt. The dad called in a little while ago, and his daughter's making a monthly tuition payment, a loan payment of $439 a month. That's a nice car she doesn't have. And so many of those kids end up living at home and hoping they can never get out of debt. And now here's the Princeton Review with their new book, Colleges That Pay You Back, the 200 schools that give you the best bang for your buck. On a phone line right now is Rob Franek. Rob, this is John. Welcome back. How are you, sir?
Very well. Thanks for the invitation, John.
You're on the staff of the Princeton Review. The Princeton Review does a number of publications. This is just one of them, right?
That's right. We have about 152 in publication, from test preparation to college admissions and, of course, financial aid titles as well.
What's the thrust of this one? What do you mean colleges that pay you back?
Well, we started with a list of 2,000 schools, John, and then we winnowed it down to the 200 colleges and universities that are listed in the book. And quite simply, we were looking at return on your tuition investment and thinking about, first, we wanted to make sure that these schools were superlative in the classroom and providing a great experience for a student, but then looking at cost, aid, student debt, as you were mentioning in your opening remarks, how much grant aid a typical student was getting, that's the free money you don't have to pay back. And then we partnered with PayScale for two additional data points, alumni salary, of course, after graduation, young alum, and then throughout their career, and then job satisfaction. Were those alumni satisfied with the undergraduate education that they had gotten at their schools, and did they feel that it propelled them along to where they are in their career right now?
But is the idea that you'll be able to earn the cost of going to school back? Is that what we're saying?
Well, it's that, one, you'll be able to earn the cost of it coming back to you. But very specifically, how is that happening? Is it happening through internships? Is it happening through alumni network, through a career services office, so that we're giving college-bound students and their parents some more substance, you know, when they get onto campus and they start to talk to admissions counselors and other students on campus?
Is that a – are you currently being arrested, or is that a child in the background?
You know what? I live in Chelsea right on 7th Avenue in Manhattan, and there's a police station on the next block, so I apologize for the noise.
Well, hopefully they won't come pounding on your door.
I know.
We'll keep talking here, and if I have to put you in another room, I'll take a break, okay?
Fair enough.
Let's hear how this sounds. So the University of Illinois, I'm happy to see the one at Champaign-Urbana is on the list. That's sort of the marquee state university for Illinois, obviously, and really it's one of the great universities in the country, don't you think?
Oh, it is so true, and it has long been on our list of favorites at the Princeton Review, and I was so pleased. Not only, you know, was University of Illinois a superlative school academically, but they're answering the question that so many students and parents have on their mind, college-bound students. Is the tuition going to be worth the investment? Is the academic sacrifice that I'm going to make going to be worth it? And, of course, is the financial aid sacrifice? And the answer is yes on both counts.
You list the annual in-state tuition, which is $12,036. Room and board is $10,008, so I'm at $2,223 there. Fees is another $3,600, so I'm at about $36, and then books and supplies. So that one ain't cheap, but at least the tuition for going to U of I in Champaign-Urbana is $12,000.
Yeah, you're right. And then I think the statistic that I'm most proud about is looking at the need-based scholarship offerings that Illinois has. I mean, it's on average $13,500 per student. And again, that is gift aid that students don't have to pay back. So you're right. They're keeping the sticker cost fairly low and in line with what we've chatted about in the past. You know, what a typical, you know, public university would charge for 1 year of tuition, but then cutting that cost down for students that are demonstrating need as they're coming in with a $13,000, you know, grant aid package.
Well, I'm surprised it's that high. So $27,000 is about what it costs to go to the U of I if you can get in, and then on average it's $13,500 of student aid.
That is correct.
Wow. You know, do these schools outprice themselves to begin with? I mean, what's the point of saying University of Chicago is $50,000 or U of I is $28,000 if, in fact, most people don't even pay that price?
Well, you know, it's true, and it's a good question to bring up, and there are many students that don't pay that. I mean, we talk about this at the Princeton Review, saying about two-thirds of all students that are going, particularly to the schools that are in this book, but many of four-year colleges and universities that are out there, are getting some form of aid. Now, that could be aid based on financial need. It could be aid based on academic merit, from high school GPA to SAT and ACT scores. So schools are, we can call it discounting here. We could call it scholarship granting in another queue as well. But there are some students that are paying those high prices. You know, NYU in my backyard here, $68,000 this year. There are many students that are paying the full fare, and hopefully many that are not.
Yeah, no kidding. You say this about the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign also. Career information from payscale.com on ROI, return on investment, you give it a 90. Yep. I presume 90 is a high number, right?
It is a very high number, of course. Yeah. And then that's on a 60 to 99. So it's in the top category for us on financial aid.
The median starting salary, for people with a bachelor's degree and no more is $55,000. The median mid-career salary for bachelor's is $97,000. Huh. That sounds like a lot of money to me.
It is a lot of money, and I do think that it's well above what we've seen at many schools, particularly for that median starting, median starting salary for students. We talk about this, at the Prince Reed pretty often. Knowing if you want to major in, let's say, education, and your starting salary would be $40,000, let's say, it's probably not wise for you to take on debt that would be over $40,000. As you were saying in your opening, remarks to some folks that you've talked to, or a young person that was on there saying that they were making a $400+ payment per month. I mean, that's a huge debt to saddle some students with. And I think that students can be a little more pragmatic at the beginning, saying, what do I want to major in? What discipline do I want to study in? What career do I ultimately want to go into? Look at the starting salaries there, and then look at the average debt that school is holding.
If you want to ask about a school in Illinois or elsewhere, you can call 312-981-7200. I'm glad you have the Illinois Institute of Technology on there. Illinois Wesleyan is on there. You like Indiana University, another Big Ten school. And about the University of Chicago, you write this. The University of Chicago operates a completely need-blind admissions process, admitting qualified students regardless of their financial situation. Once admitted, the school guarantees to meet 100% of the students' demonstrated financial need. The school's committed to limiting debt from student loans. Students graduate with around $22,500 in loan debt on average. That's less than the national average.
It is less than the national average, and you're so right. The national average being close to $30,000, and that's an average between public and private schools. And University of Chicago and, many schools like it are doing the near impossible, which, as you say, is to meet a student and family's need 100%. Now, they have the financial wherewithal to do that, with average grants this year, nearly $40,000 in an average grant to a student. But what we've seen, through our queue at Prince Review is somebody might cross University of Chicago off of their list early on simply because it has a high sticker cost without doing the due diligence and the homework to say, what's the average grant that students are getting? What's the average median salary as we're talking about here? And I feel like we've done a ton of this homework for students so that they can feel empowered and not be scared by a high sticker cost.
So because room and board, tuition and books at the University of Chicago is $66,000. The selectivity score, admissions, is a 99, meaning it's as selective as a school gets in this country. Campus life, quality of life rating, it says 92. Okay, there you're wrong, because isn't the U of C's motto, where fun goes to die? That's
you're very right. No, you're very right, but I'm glad still that statistic is in there, because it comes directly from students. We've been doing student surveying for a long time at Princeton Review now, 25 years this year that we've been actively surveying undergraduates. And that rating for student life comes from them. Now, it is a particular subset of a pretty superlative, gunner set of students, but, it's a fabulous school. And
right, so if you pick those kids up and drop them at Southern Illinois University Carbondale, where I went to school, or even IU, they might not be as happy because it wouldn't be as intellectually challenging to them. So this is so a 92 doesn't mean that it's all fun and games, but it is for this subset of students, I guess.
You have it exactly. And that's what we've been, talking about for so long at Prince Review. It's finding fit, and that fit, finding a best fit school. That means an academic fit, a campus culture fit, a financial aid fit, a career services fit. And the thing is that in my mind, makes the college process kind of fun. What you're choosing, obviously, your home, your academic home, as well as your physical home for a long time. People are going to ask you where you went to college for as long as you're living. And that is a great thing to be able to confidently make that choice and saying, this is without question a best fit school for
me. And by the way, I did go to Southern Illinois University at Carbondale, and it never makes anybody's list because the academic standards to get in are low, and – It doesn't have a lot of the things that the prestigious schools do. I think it's a really good school for broadcasting and journalism, though. I don't know if anybody ever breaks it out that way. But you can imagine how people like me get a little defensive during conversations like this, because you think, well, wait a minute. I went to school. I worked hard. It worked out real well for me. So what's wrong with going to Southern Illinois at Carbondale, right?
Oh, yeah, I totally hear you, and I completely agree. You know, my undergrad school is not in this book either. Drew University, Madison, New Jersey, great fit for me. But when we're thinking about the return on investment, I do think that there are many schools, the 200 in this book specifically, that are really making the not only the college experience, the academic experience, as you know, you and I are both pleased with our undergrad experiences academically, but are they making that ROI exchange that these 200 superlative schools are? And what I love is that I think that many schools will use these 200 as straw men for themselves, you know, so that they can look to see what are the folks doing at University of Chicago or DePaul University in Greencastle, awesome little school. What are they doing to make that tuition dollar actually really valuable to a grad?
Well, let's do this. I'll pause here. We'll pick up a couple of phone lines. That could be you, 312-981-7200. And we'll also look at the best alumni network, the best schools that pay you back for students with no demonstrated need, the top 50 colleges that pay you back anywhere in the country. How do these lists sort of break down? And we'll take your call, too. That's next on WGN. It's 2:25, and we're visiting on WGN. I'm John Williams with Rob Franek. He is with the Princeton Review. Hey, Rob, you still there?
I'm still here, John.
Number three, Texas A&M University College Station. Number two, Penn State University. Number one is Dartmouth. I would have figured Notre Dame would have been number one for best alumni network.
You know, it has a powerful alumni network, without question. But, I have to say, Dartmouth is pretty exceptional. And it's exceptional for two reasons. And this is what we write about in the profile as well. The alumni network gives two things: internships and cooperative experience when students are undergraduates, and then a lifelong alumni network for jobs after graduation. Now, I think there are many schools that fall into that category, but Dartmouth is pretty superlative.
On the colleges that pay you back, well, I'll go to the list here in just a second, but let's pick up a couple of phone lines. And Ben, I'll let you do the engineering at the station. Go ahead and lock Rob in, and then let's pick up with Marianne on line two. Hi, Marianne. There you are. You're on WGN.
Hi, John. Hi. And what my granddaughter is going to be a transfer student for the University of Findlay in Findlay, Ohio. Very, very small school. It was known for equestrian, but also business, I believe. I'm not sure if it makes it because it's such a small school, but it seemed like they had a lot of internships, or at least they stressed that in the interview process when we went.
Well, I think it's a fine school, and it's not in this list of 200, but we certainly write about it in other publications at Princeton Review and certainly on our website. And what I love is that when students can confidently make a decision about a fit school, whether it's freshman admission or transfer admission, and honestly, I'm an old admissions guy as well, I love working with transfer students because they've already been around the block the first time. They know what they liked about their first school, whether it was a community college or another four-year school, and now they're very discriminating about their taste when they move on to a four-year college. So I think that you've made a wise choice, and I think you're very right. Internships are key.
Oh, thanks. Good.
Thanks, Marianne. We appreciate the call. Do you have a bias to big schools or small schools?
I try not to have a bias, and I do think that, you know, now in my early 40s, I would choose a much larger school than I went to when I was an undergrad. But I had such a good experience at my own school, that we try to keep a very wide lens at Princeton Review, public and private, large and small, urban, suburban, and rural. And what I love is that, you know, I spend more time on college campuses, I'm convinced, John, than any other person on the planet, and that there are just so many schools out there, nearly 4,000 four-year colleges, and that there are so many possible good fits for incoming students.
One more call, but let me get to this list.
Yeah.
Top 50 colleges that pay you back. We're talking about return on investment. Number 10, Harvard. 9, Rice. 8, UCal Berkeley. 7, Yale. Then Stanford. MIT. Harvey Mudd, which pops up on everybody's list, and nobody knows what that is. Then Cooper Union for the Advancement of Science and Art. Number 2 is Princeton. And number 1 is California Institute of Technology. So I guess those ones that turn out engineers and scientists, huh?
Many of them are, and including Harvey Mudd. And Harvey Mudd is one of the five Claremont colleges, about 35 miles outside of Los Angeles. The other schools you've probably heard of, Pomona, Pitzer, Claremont McKenna, Scripps is the all women's college, and then the fifth school in the Claremont is Harvey Mudd. Small school, 800 students, specializing in engineering. And then, you know, when we think about Caltech and Pasadena, 1,000 students, incredibly selective. About 77% of all students were accepted, but a $94,000 median starting salary. And that, now they are all STEM majors because it is an engineering school, but a superlative school nonetheless.
One last call. Tom, you're on WGN. What was the school you were asking about, Tom?
Notre Dame. I was interested in that. I've got a grandson. I'm an alum. My son's an alum, and I'm looking to figure out about my grandson. How are we going to take care of that, and is it still a good value?
Oh, I think it's an extreme value, and you know, Notre Dame, we've been writing about it for some time at the Princeton Review. I mean, certainly outstanding academic work, huge alumni, as John was saying, and certainly as you're already an alum, sir. I do think that there is a lifelong commitment on the part of alum from many schools, and I think Notre Dame is an excellent example of that. And what I really like about really any of these schools that we've been talking about today is that a student's experience doesn't end within the four walls of their classroom, right? We know that students are getting out there. They're doing internships, experiential learning, cooperative programs. They're studying abroad. I mean, all of these things make for some of the most employable grads upon graduation because of those outside experiences outside the classroom that complement the study that we're doing inside the classroom.
$62,000 a year, Grandpa, in case you're helping with tuition.
Yes, I guess I have to retire.
Right.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Good luck to you guys.
Thank you very much.
The admission selectivity on a scale of 60 to 99, Notre Dame is at 98, costs $62,000 a year with room and board to get in. The median starting salary for a bachelor's grad is $55,000. Here's the number that surprises me, and I'll let you comment on this, and then I'll let you go, Rob. But the quality of life ranking is a 65. Unless that's a typo, I would have figured Notre Dame kids had the world by the year or whatever, that life would be good for them. 65.
I hear you, and it is, it's not a typo. We go directly, again, to whom we would consider real college experts about their own experiences. I think that we do a great deal of homework at the Princeton Review on so many different colleges, but we go to students and ask them their experiences, particularly for, you know, qualitative information like quality of life. And that could be anything from food to the residence halls to the quality of the library, career services, and so on. Now, we try to break many of those things out.
Or the dorms, yeah,
and rating,
right,
as well. Of course. Absolutely.
Very interesting. Well, okay, so here it is, gang, one more time. Colleges that pay you back, the 200 schools that give you the best bang for your tuition buck. You got a kid that's in high school or college, this is the one for the mom and the dad, if nobody else. Rob, it's a pleasure to visit with you again, sir.
Always good to be here, John. Thanks for the invitation.
It's 2:32. We'll pause here, catch you up on the news next on WGN. Think about Kessler. This is John Williams, and that's a little Rihanna to start this last segment of the John Williams Show. I'm on Saturdays from 1 to 3, and Saturdays right around 2:40, where we are now, we do something called the Vibe Score segment, V-I-B-E-S-C-O-R-E, Vibe Score is an app. You can get it for free. Go to Vibe Score. No, don't go to vibescore.com. Go to the App Store and download it for free. That's where you get to score the news. Follow groups. We'll feed you information about the groups you're interested in, and then you get to score it. We ask questions, and you answer. So in the music group, we started out this week with the new Rihanna song. Griff, you posted that one. What's the title of that song?
Work.
Work, and what are we giving that?
I'm giving it a 75. The first time, it took me a couple times. I didn't love it so much at first, but it's grown on me.
You got to like the Rihanna sound. And if you don't, I don't think you'll be there for that. But
it's definitely a repetition sound. Because she loves, you know, the umbrella, Ella, Ella. This one's the work, 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 work. But it's a good song.
Kristen Decker always joins us for this segment. Hey, Deck, how are you?
Good.
81 from you. Well, if you're a fan of that, please follow us on VibeScore because poor Rihanna's only getting a 34, and she deserves better than that. On the viral, we have a group called Viral. And the Viral group, we posted a video that gives you the history of Japan in under 10 minutes. That is the most addictive, fascinating, funny thing I've ever seen. Oh my God, is that awesome.
Yeah.
Where did you find that?
I saw somebody posted it on Facebook, and at that time it had like 20,000 views. It had just been posted. And now it's up to 4 million in about a week.
It is so funny.
It is. And I want them to do it because it uses bad language. It's really fast-paced. It has musical jokes and stingers. But it seems to be historically true. And I mean like from when Japan was connected to China by land. It goes back millions of years to today in 9 minutes. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's really cool. I looked at all the past videos that guy had done. I think his name is Bob Wirtz. And you can find this video at YouTube. Just type in History of Japan. It'll be the first thing. And he makes a lot of like 4 or 5 second videos that are there and gone, like super quick. And just little musical phrases, and he'll say, like, I'm a piece of garbage, but he, like, sings it, and it's fully, the instrumentation is full and, like, very lush, but, so it's just little jokes like that. This is the first one that he's ever done, like, a more, and it's awesome. I really want, like, to see the history of every country now.
That's
from
what I thought.
Please,
I mean,
Bob, give us more. Teach
no
us.
No kidding. He could team up with Sufjan Stevens, Griffey, and do one of every state in the union.
He gave up on that a long time ago.
I know it's ambitious, but I mean, I want him to do the United States. I want him to do China. Pick a Saudi Arabia. Pick some interesting country in the world. I'd love him to tell us that story. You can find it on VibeScore, and we're loving it there. It's getting an 86 on a scale of 1 to 100. Sadly, while that's getting an 86... a Gilmore Girls revival's getting an 87, and that's why they hate us.
No, come on.
Well, I don't see anything wrong with that.
Oh, I see nothing, and me nothing at all. Kristen, you haven't seen it, have you?
I know, but I still scored it high because I keep hearing that I will love it.
Yeah, you gotta get on.
You're such a bandwagon jumper, Deck. You gave it a high score. You don't even see this. You haven't even... Did you watch the original series, Kristen?
No, but I trust opinions around me that says you will love this show.
My wife
you will love this
show.
Show
Brenda loved that show, and I was okay with it. In the WGN radio group, we asked you, would you let your son play football after all the concussion news? Do you guys know how many teenagers died playing high school football this year? It's 7. 7 teenagers died playing football in America this year. Isn't
Are we talking insane? About throughout the whole United States?
Yeah.
Only still, 7?
You think?
Only?
I think that's if you said 7 in the last 10 years, I think I'd be okay with that. 7 in the last years. I'm sorry, Deck, that sounded like a high number to me.
See, I think that sounds like a low number.
Wow, I can't believe that. I disagree with you on that. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, think about it this way.
I just think of all, however many high school kids across the whole United States and how many play football, I would think the number would be higher.
I wonder how many concussions they've all suffered out there, too, because I think that's what's driving this question. Would you let your son play football? 100 is absolutely yes. 0 is not at all. And right now it's scoring a 22. I played high school football for no good reason, and I suffer for it today. What a bad choice on my part.
I think to me it sounds so high just because I don't think the conversation is at that place yet. I mean, our number is 22, which is pretty low. Mm-hmm. But we're not talking about this like it's any kind of emergency state. And 7 deaths in 1 year is so much to me. It sounds like...
Doesn't that sound like a lot?
It reminds you of the numbers that before they reformed the game of football, you know, with Teddy Roosevelt. I mean, I'm sure those numbers were astronomically higher, but you start to think, do we have to make serious changes to the game like they did back then?
It's funny because those are high school kids who are running slower and don't weigh as much. Imagine the speed and the, you know, size of the impact in the Big Ten, to say nothing of the pros. They're not dying there from these collisions, but boy, in high school they are. Chicago sports, Matt Forte leaves the Bears. You could have scored 100 and said, we want to keep him. By all means, make Matt Forte happy. Do not let him get away. That would be 100. Or you could score this decision a 0, like, boy, did you guys blow it. Right, Griff? And so, am I doing this right?
No, I don't think so.
Explain the option on this one.
I read it that way because I scored it in 86 that it was good that they let him go because he's expensive and is older.
I think we always let good athletes get out of Chicago, and then they come back to haunt us. So I scored it about a 20, and it's scoring a 35. Griff, your thoughts on this?
No, you're good. Right? Yeah.
We're okay?
Yeah, we're good. Sorry about that.
The Coen brothers, in general, for their body of work, what do you give Coen brothers movies? They get a 92, as they should. Coen brothers are awesome.
Yeah, they got a new one out called Hail Caesar with George Clooney and Josh Brolin. And
that one is not awesome. That is not a great...
You haven't seen it, have you?
No, I have not. Everything I've read...
How can you say that?
Griff, have you seen this movie?
Yeah, I saw it opening night.
Okay, and?
I'm always there for the Coens. It's good. It's not their best. It's a minor work.
There you go.
It's one of their silly comedies. You know, they do it all. And so it's not my favorite of theirs. But I had a great time watching
it. 1 to 100. What do you give it?
I'd go 79.
For the movie or for the Coen brothers?
For the Coen brothers, I go 97. Those around. And
yeah, so you love the Coen brothers. But this is a minor work, Decker. It wasn't a great movie.
No,
I'm going to start using that. Whenever I screw something up, I'll just go, well, it was a minor work.
It is a minor work.
I love O Brother, Where Art Thou.
Yeah, see, that's one of their... so what would you go, Kristen?
For their whole body of work, I gave them a 70.
I mean, think Fargo, Big Lebowski,
yeah,
No Country for Old Men, that one. A million others.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what my favorite Coen Brothers movie would be. Raising Arizona, right? That's in their... That's a Coen... And that was where I first sort of fell in with them. That might be in my top two or three for the Coen Brothers.
Sure. What's the Coen Brothers movie with Brad Pitt?
Burn After Reading.
I loved that movie.
That's good. Yeah, he was hilarious in that.
Now I don't know that one, Deck. I got to go look that one up. Burn After Reading.
I know for a fact you've seen it.
So I guess it wasn't very memorable.
It was a minor work for me. That's our Vibe Score segment. You get to score the news. Follow the groups that you like. We'll ask you questions about them, and then we report back here. Vibe Score is one word, and you can download it for free. All right, let's catch up with the boys from The Beat next on WGN. So what are you guys doing on your show today?
Well, there's I think Adam's a little emotional today, John. One of the great Chicago Bears of all time has officially left the building. Adam wrote a great piece on WGNRadio.com on his Bears blog about Matt Forte. I'm a little bit verklempt about it as well, if you will, because he was such a class act. So we're going to start with one of the great Chicago athletes that I think that nobody ever really cared about.
I can never tell when you're being sarcastic, Mark. Was that sincere or was all of that just bullcrap?
That was sincere, and
your voice doesn't really change when you go from sarcastic to, regular.
Now I got
to
work on my whole game here, John. Now it's like I got to look in the mirror and evaluate things. This is upsetting. I'll have to get through this. But yes, no, Matt Forte. I think there was I didn't like the way the Bears went about it. As far as why don't you see what he's worth on the open market and bring him back? I mean, that was the way I was looking at things. If we're going, we really want to get to the pure sincerity of the issue. And he was a great player, but I think the part about resonating, because he was so dry.
I don't think people appreciated him.
I didn't. I barely did, but I don't think he should be gone either, if that makes sense.
What do you guys even mean by appreciate him? You mean he wasn't a good guy, or he wasn't as good a player as we need? Because I thought he was a pretty good halfback.
I think that the city, and not just, I don't want to limit to the city, I think the league in general, the NFL in general, whether it's other fans, media, whatever, I don't think he ever got the recognition he deserved for how good of a player he really was. I mean, we're talking about one of the most versatile, durable, and productive running backs that has played. People don't realize he leads the NFL in yards from scrimmage since he entered the league in 2008. I think that surprises a lot of people.
Wow. I would not. I mean, I'm glad to hear that. But I don't know that. Would you guys say that the Bears offense did enough to sort of capitalize on his skills over the years?
I would. I think that's a great part of this conversation. I'm not sure they used him to the amount they should have.
Yeah. Well, I'll let you guys go. We'll be listening. One quick question. Are you guys going to watch the Slam Dunk NBA competition at all?
I know I am. Very excited. Got a DVR and everything. I'll be at Northwestern Illinois Basketball. Well, right when I get home, John, I'm going right to it.
No chance.
See, I can't tell if Mark's being sincere or sarcastic when he says that.
Would you like me to recite the roster to you?
Well, that would be proof. Zach LaVine's going to win it, by the way, Carm.
Yeah, you know that the Bulls picked Doug McDermott over Zach LaVine, who not only is going to be in the Slam Dunk contest, but he was the MVP of the Rising Stars Challenge, and he's putting up 35 points in different games this NBA season. But that's neither here nor there. That was sarcasm, John.
I've seen him play every game this season, this Zach LaVine, and he's just now figuring it out, and
right.
He's going to be good.
Yeah.
He's got crazy skills. All right, fellas, we'll be listening. Have another good show, as always. That's Mark Carmen and Adam Hoge. We're getting ready for the beat after the news. After this, on WGN.